over this past week, I got a lot of a very positive response to John Duckworth's comments last Sunday on the topic of suffering. So it was suggested that we take and continue on with that subject this morning. The for many reasons. Let's begin by reading a few verses from the first chapter of 2 Thessalonians. You don't necessarily have to turn to this. Let me just read it to you. It says, "From Paul, Silas, and Timothy, to the church of Thessalonica, keep safe in God our Father and in the Lord Jesus Christ. May God the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ give you rich blessings and peace-filled hearts and minds. Dear brothers, giving thanks to God for you is not only the right thing to do, but it is our duty to God. Because of the really wonderful way your faith has grown, and because of your growing love for each other, we are happy to tell other churches about your patience and complete faith in God in spite of all the crushing troubles and hardships you are going through. This is only one example of the fair, just way God does things, for he is using your suffering to make you ready for his kingdom." I want to read again that one little part. "In spite of all the crushing troubles and hardships you are going through." Doesn't this sound like Bethany Chapel the last 2 years? Georgia Comfort, her encounter with cancer. Ruth Pollard's major surgery while in her 80s. Steve Richards' courageous battle with liver cancer. Brenda Starr's battle with cancer and her subsequent death. Pete Warren's death. Bill Gardner's tragic death in an auto accident. For such a small fellowship, why have we had such enormous suffering? Let's go back briefly to 2 Thessalonians and read again. "Dear brothers, giving thanks to God for you is not only the right thing to do, but is our duty to God because of the really wonderful way your faith has grown and because of your growing love for each other. We are happy to tell other churches about your patience and complete faith in God in spite of all the crushing troubles and hardships you are going through. This is only one example of the fair, just way God does things, for he is using your sufferings to make you ready for his kingdom." Quite frankly, that doesn't seem very logical to me. Why does it seem that God is beating up on us, as it were, as a fellowship of believers here? Doesn't he really want the very best for us? Take, for example, Steve Richards. This is one that I just can't understand. When you hear his story, it seems almost like God is playing games with him. First, Steve waits and waits and waits for a liver transplant. Then, all of a sudden, one turns up. However, only after Steve is on the operating table and prepared for the operation is he informed that it's not a good liver. Then a few days later, another liver comes up, but is subsequently found also to be defective. Then shortly thereafter, a third liver is found, and Steve is surgically opened up, resulting in finding out that the cancer is spread, so no liver transplant is possible. Why? Why the raising of hope, followed by a dashing of hope? Then a resurrection of hope, followed again by much disappointment. And finally, a final hope, followed by the coolest of all information. Prognosis is bleak. But you know what? Is it possible that it is wrong to say that all hope is gone? There have been other people like Steve in the same type of situation, and all of a sudden things change. And miracles do happen. So we've got to be careful that we don't prejudge these situations. And they're much more complex than what they seem. How should we respond to such suffering when it seems so illogical? Let me read a few sentences from the obituary for Bill Gardner. You remember he used to sit right up in here with his Heidi. That appeared in the recent alumni magazine for Wheaton College. Now listen to what it says. It's really, really clever, I think. It says, Bill Gardner died May 1st in a head-on collision while on his way to his job as a social studies teacher at Billy Hollow Junior High School in Ingleside, Illinois. He and his wife, Heidi, had been married for only 16 months. They were living in Libertyville, Illinois. His father-in-law described Bill as a young man totally dedicated to the Lord. I'll skip down here, and it says, during one of these summers, Bill wrote these words taken from his devotional journals that total more than 400 pages. Heaven is my home. This is a quote. Heaven is my home and is a place of surety, a sign of Christ's strength. God has saved me, and I realize his goodness in keeping me safe unless he wills otherwise. May I have his best interest at heart. My ultimate goal is to glorify him by being more like Jesus. Or another example comes to mind. One of my most prized personal possessions is an envelope full of sympathy cards when we lost our son Andrew 15 years ago. I don't look through the thing, but it's really a tremendous comfort to have this envelope. I don't know why, but it just is. The other day I was looking through it, and I ran across a note from Joe Soderquist. Now, for those of you who don't know who Joe Soderquist is, he's married to Don Soderquist. They were in fellowship here for many years at Bethany Chapel. He's the third highest fellow at Walmart, which is one of the fastest and largest corporations in the world, fastest growing largest corporation in the world. In fact, investment advisors claim that in the next 4 or 5 years they should be the largest corporation in the United States. They got there only because the people running it have a tremendous amount of common sense. And talking about the power behind the throne, Joe Soderquist is a very, very pragmatic person who has a tremendous amount of common sense. And watch how she approaches this topic of suffering. Remember the kind of mind that this came from. Dear Ed and Judy, we have tried to write to you both for many days now, and somehow the words would not come. Don and I are praying for you each morning and evening as we start and end our day. Words seem so empty at a time like this, but we want you to know we love you and your dear family and can only bring you all before Him who really is the God of all comfort. We lost our first child. I did not carry the child all the way, but I can remember how very heartsick we were. But His ways are best somehow. Even though we do not understand why something like this should happen, please let us know if in any way we can help. I would be happy to take the children or in any way help. Please, and this is what, please underline three times, do not hesitate to call. May you all truly, and the next four words are underlined, know His love and comfort. A great, great sympathy note, because it doesn't fool around. It says, hey, we don't know why it's happening, but there's a reason, there's a basis for it. And what I'd like to do this morning is this. When I talk about suffering, and I indicated those number of people there, that's nothing. That's only the tip of the iceberg at Bethany Chapel. Not only suffering that people have currently gone through, but what they've gone through years before. There are a lot of experts in this room right now in the art of suffering and coping with that suffering. For example, what we define as suffering, too, changes a great deal. In the sense that we often don't view as suffering really can be some enormous suffering. It's not just what's happening objectively, but what the person who is suffering it perceives it to be. For example, high school kids. Today, being a high school student is a very, very rough activity. You are constantly being assaulted. Your value system, the background, the heritage you come from is constantly being assaulted, and the peer pressure is absolutely enormous. Many high school, Christian high school students today suffer enormously. And yet we just take it as a given thing. And I think that when we talk about suffering, we've got to expand our views to understand what it is, and there's a great deal of it that goes on. What I'd like to do this morning is just talk about this. I've said many times that some of the best things I've heard at Bethany Chapel have not been from the platform, but been from the congregation during this 10 o'clock service. Because the information and the wisdom that God has given each of us can be very helpful to other people as well. Would anyone like to make any comments or suggestions at this point in time? That's an excellent point, and that is very true, that the economy of earth that we live in and the economy of heaven are so radically different, and what's important here isn't always important here and vice versa. And to live between those two economies is a very, very difficult thing. That's a very, very good point. Any other comments? David, would you quote for us again, for those who weren't at 9 o'clock service, the quote that you gave about belief, etc. I think this was absolutely outstanding. Now listen to this carefully. I think the thing that's important is the fact that we do have this propensity, because of the culture we live in and the civilization we live in, that we have this, somehow have this need to have an absolute grasp and understanding why something happened. And that just isn't possible. And as a result, you know, for example, one thing I think is interesting about suffering is the fact that, for example, Steve Richards, we'll talk about Steve Richards and what's happening to him. But what's happening to him very directly impacts upon his wife and his children and all kinds of other people. And as a result, the negative consequences can be enormous when it spreads itself out. Another thing, too, is this whole area of free will in these types of situations. How much does free will and the creation of suffering as a result of the poor exercising of free will, how does this all absorb into the whole mix of things? For example, the other day I got my 11th notice to be a witness in a drunk driving case. As we are all aware, in DuPage County, there's a lot of playing of patty cake with alcoholic drivers. But this is how bad it was. One day, one night, I was with this 2 years ago, and it still hasn't gone to trial. My son Daniel and my youngest daughter, Judith Ruth, were with me at Jewel City up in the north part of Wheaton. We were coming out of the store. At that time, Judith was 11 and Danny was 15. And the fellow in front of us was so drunk, he had to walk sideways and maintain his balance. It was really sad. So I immediately called the police, and we waited, and we waited. We waited for over 15 minutes, and the police never came. This guy was having a very difficult time finding his truck, and getting into his truck, and everything else. So finally I said, now Danny, if he leaves, I want you to stay here, tell the police which way he goes, and Judith Ruth and I will follow him. And he went east on Geneva Road, and it was the most frightening experience I ever had in my life, because this fellow was weaving all over. He was even going up on the curb and on the parkway, completely off of the street. And then he weaved back, and at one point, he took, and he went into, so tragic, it's funny, he went into the third lane, and in the fourth lane was a car that appeared like it had a family in it. And he just barely missed hitting them head on. Now what if he had hit them head on? Can you imagine the suffering that would be experienced? Was it their fault? Does God interject and control those situations completely and completely overwhelm the free will of that fellow? I don't know. But somehow there's a great deal of suffering out there that is done mainly by because of the free will, as a result of the free will of human beings. And it's a very, very difficult thing. But I do think that one thing is important, that's this. What often happens is when one thinks about this subject is the fact that it's so complex that the complexity in and of itself overwhelms you. And you just kind of, well, I really don't know what's going on. You really don't have a very good perspective of how to react to suffering. And I think that Joe Soderquist did an excellent, excellent job. Listen, we really don't know what's going on, but God is sovereign. He is in command, and He has said that He will not leave us or forsake us. And He will protect us. And it is amazing how often these things do turn out for His glory. And in fact, probably always turn out for His glory. Any other comments? Now, I will admit I made some rather radical statements here. I've got to be careful. Yes. Describe your profession for the rest of people. And you went to the Air Force Academy. I mean, you flew fighter airplanes. Okay.
Yeah.
two comments on that, and that's it. The first one is this, and that is, I think there is differences between the suffering that is experienced when someone dies. If you have somebody who is 85 years of age, Christian, led a good life, etc., often you go to those type of funerals, and there really isn't any suffering. There's really a joy of the homegoing of that particular person. On the other hand, I remember one time being at a funeral of a two-year-old whose father had accidentally backed over her and killed her in the driveway. There was a lot of suffering at that funeral. So death itself, depending upon the circumstances, creates lesser or more degrees of suffering. The second thing that's very important too, and I think you were touching on this, and that is the whole fact of it's all relative, this suffering, in the sense that we suffer the greatest the more we have a mindset that we think we have rights to certain things. Why do I or Steve Richards have a right to have a good liver? We don't have that right. Why do we have a right that everything in our body functions properly? And the point is, the only reason why this happens is because of the good graces of God has given us that type of thing. And when we understand that relationship, we can operate better. Yes. But you certainly demonstrate what happens to us all as human beings, and that is this tremendous vacuum that sets in, where it kind of overwhelms us. And we all take the idea that we have a propensity to take the idea that, you know, like we're the only one that's experienced this type of thing, this tremendous hollowness that comes in a setting like this. And I think, you know, that's one of the things I think is important for us, to be helpful to someone who's going through a great deal of suffering. And that is one of the best things I've ever noticed with how to help somebody cope with suffering, is to get near them and just be a good listener to them, to get their thoughts out on the table, etc. And a lot of times that can be very, very therapeutic. There's an older lady in her 80s down at the Palace Heights who has a policy and has had it for many, many years. She's an incredibly good businesswoman, still is to this day, and very pragmatic person. But every Wednesday morning, she spends her time calling all the widows who have been recently widowed in the last year. And all she does is listen. Does very little talking, but just listen. Just to sort out one's thoughts because of that tremendous vacuum of what's happening. Why me, Lord, etc. Any other comments? Yes, Bert.
Thank you.
That's an excellent point. I'll never forget my grandmother telling a story of my grandfather who was killed in a car train crash when he was 35. And she said she experienced a great deal of anguish and at the suffering of it all. But she probably never saw so much suffering as when her husband was greatly worried about the salvation of his parents back in Scotland. And he made a trip over there for that purpose, to make sure they knew about their internal security, etc. And I always found that fascinating as a teenager that there was he suffered so much because of that, worrying about that particular thing. And I think that's very true, that we shouldn't restrict ourselves to understanding that suffering is only a little narrow area. There's many, many other areas as well. And the spiritual area is very important as well. Yes?
I could add up to that. I would think that internal suffering is far worse in the long run. When somebody gets cancer, dies from the symptoms, there's no questioning whether because I was following God correctly or whatever. When you get into other situations, parents whose child has turned away and God is wrong direction, things like that, you get all sorts of self-questioning, all sorts of, well, people get into this loop of
good point, because I think the amount of suffering that goes on among Christians, for example, who have allowed themselves to get on a guilt trip, is immense. It's absolutely immense, and I think that, no, you're absolutely right in that regard. That's a very, very difficult area, and there's a point where you just kind of have to leave it in God's hands. Listen, hey, I'm not perfect. I may have done something wrong in the past. I'm going to continue to love the person who has the problem, etc. And all I can do is, today is the first day of the rest of my life. I can't relive everything in the past. And I think that you find people who are able to cope with suffering, very often you can tell how good a job they're doing by their perception. Are they living in the past? Are they living today? Or are they living in the future? And the fact is, where you're living very often gives some indication of how well you're coping with that, with suffering. Any other comments? And just because I make these comments doesn't mean I'm an expert. Listen, this Steve Richards situation really kind of thrown me, and I want to make sure that I don't leave the impression that my comments are sacrilegious and I'm questioning God, but rather I just don't understand what's going on, and it's a very, very difficult thing. It's a very, very difficult thing, for example, with Steve Richardson, this in, out, hope, non-hope. Very, very difficult. Any other comments? Yes, Brett.
Yeah.
we got just a couple minutes. Let me make a couple more comments, and that's this. One thing, too, I think, and then I want to get back to the physical suffering, etc. One thing I noticed, too, is the fact that I'll never forget a situation years ago where a lady died, and she had four minor children, and she died about 2 weeks before Christmas. And these children went to Wheaton Christian Grammar School, and they got more Christmas gifts, I mean, literally hundreds of Christmas gifts from people in the school, etc. Their mother was gone for Christmas. About 3 months later, I was talking to the father, and he happened to say that, you know, he was very thankful what had happened to the children beforehand, etc. But in the 3 months after Christmas, they had only had one person who would ever come back to them. And this so often happens. There's Heidi Gardner, and her husband's been dead for 2 months. How much do we get back to her? That's when the real is beginning to sink in. They're out of a state of shock. That's when a lot of time the sympathy we can give to people is the greatest. It's later on, not immediately up front. I know a fellow that has a policy. He says, I never waste my money sending flowers to a funeral. I always send them to the family 3 months later. He says they don't get anything then and they enjoy them a lot better. Had a very strange thing here happen one day. And this is really important. Of those who are going through suffering, what getting into the Word can be helpful to them as they try to cope with that suffering. And Mrs. Richards came up to me one Sunday, this is several Sundays ago, and she said, oh, my, glad you read the 103rd chapter of Psalm. My husband and I read that every single day. And it gives us enormous hope. And I look back on it and, well, you know, I can see some stuff. Let me read it to you, okay? And then we'll close. Dave, can I have you pray after we're done with it? Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. Who forgiveth all mine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercy, who satisfieth thy mouth with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagle. The Lord executeth righteousness and judgment for all that are oppressed. He made known his ways unto Moses, his acts unto the children of Israel. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and plenteous in mercy. He will not always chide, neither will he keep his anger forever. He hath not dealt with us after our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. For as the heaven is high above the earth, so great is his mercy towards them that fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far hath he removed our transgressions from us. Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. For he knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. As for man, his days are as grass, as the flower of the field, so he flourisheth. For the wind passeth over it, and it is gone, and the place thereof shall know it no more. But the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting, upon them that fear him, and his righteousness on their children's children. To such as keep his covenant, and to those that remember his commandments, to do them. The Lord hath prepared his throne in the heaven, and his kingdom ruleth over it. Bless the Lord, ye his angels, that excel in strength, and do his commandments, hearkening unto the voice of his word. Bless ye the Lord, all ye his hosts, ye ministers of his that do his pleasure. Bless the Lord, all his works, in all places, and his dominion. Bless the Lord, O my soul. David, would you close?